This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
Well. Good evening and welcome to this week's edition of Well, Well, Well. Jason and Tex with you this evening from the Victorian AIDS Council Gay Men's Health Centre. Dex, how's it going?
Very well, thank you, Jason. Very well indeed. Of course, we need to thank Doug and the Rainbow Report team for another fantastic show. But, Jason, I have that all-important question for you.
What is that?
How are you?
I'm fantastic, and I'm actually really excited about this week's show.
Now, could you tell us, perhaps, and share with the listener, what is on the show this week?
Well, this is the second week of our very special month of July, as we're doing four special shows that cover the 30th, it's to celebrate the 30th anniversary of the Victorian AIDS Council Gay Men's Health Centre. And to do so, every week we'll be covering a different decade.
Yep.
And this week we're covering the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll be chatting soon to longtime Victorian AIDS Council Gay Men's Health Centre volunteer Gordon Wilson and also Joy presenter about the organisation back at that time.
Jason, it is very true that we love to hear from our listener. Now, there's a variety of platforms and ways that they can get in contact with us tonight. Would you like to share with us what some of those platforms and devices and ways are?
Tex, you still make me laugh when you talk about platforms, but I love it. The easiest way is to kind of keep in touch with us in between shows, and you can do so by going to facebook.com/wellwellwelljoy, or you can speak to us live during the show by sending an email to onair@joy.org.au or sending an SMS to 0427-JOY949. But if you want to speak to a real-life person, how do you do that?
Well, you can speak to a real-life person. We have Robbie waiting out there for your phone call. 1-300-JOY-949. Really easy number to remember. 1-300-JOY-949. And that way you get to interact with, yes, a real-life human being. And he's a lovely one too.
Now, given that we are going to be talking about all things 90s, the show is going to feature music from the 90s.
Oh, fantastic, guys.
Some fantastic tracks, some highlights, you might say, of the 90s, and some things that might be camp, but others may deem lowlights of the 90s.
Oh.
So, let's have a look. Listen, the first one we've got is a bit of Canadiana, and that's Alanis Morissette with Hand in My Pocket. This is Well, Well, Well on Joy 94.9.
I'm poor, but I'm kind. I'm short, but I'm healthy, yeah.
This is Well, Well, Well on Joy 94.9, and that was Hand in My Pocket by Alanis Morissette.
Which was a gorgeous track.
It's a beautiful one. It's one of the highlights, I would say, of the 1990s.
Really?
That album was a fantastic
release. So it's
release. Downhill
from now on. Great.
No. There's more to come.
Oh, great. Good on, Jason.
Now, joining Tex and I this evening in the studio is Gordon Wilson. Gordon, you may recognize Gordon's voice as he is a volunteer here at Joy 94.9 and has also been a longtime volunteer with the Victorian AIDS Council Gay Men's Health Centre. Good evening, Gordon, and welcome to Well, Well, Well.
Good evening, Jason. Good evening, Tex.
Good evening to you.
Now, before we get into the VAC's history, let's maybe start with a little bit about you. Let's go back to the very beginning. When did you come out?
Well, I knew I was different when I was about 6. And I came out to my parents when I was 14 because I wanted to go and learn to be a ballet dancer. And my father said to me, everybody will call you a sissy. And I said, well, I am. So what? That was it. And they said, okay.
That That's fantastic, because I actually said to my parents I wanted to do ballet, and my father absolutely refused.
Did he?
Didn't say anything like, you'll be called a sissy or anything. Mm. Just said, no, my boys play footy.
Oh, right. Mm. Yeah. No, my mum and dad supported me all the way through. Yeah, that's I had brilliant. No problem. Yeah.
And so what was it like outside of your family? When did you come out kind of beyond your family group?
Oh, I sort of let people know as I was going along, you know, and I never ever hid it, you know, but it was just one of those things. I was me. I'd worked out who I was quite young, and that was going to be me for the rest of my life. So I thought, well, what's the use of carrying it and hiding it, you know, so...
And Gordon, I guess we could start off with a little bit about HIV. Was it called HIV, or was it still called AIDS when you started with the organisation?
No, it had been classified HIV by then.
All right.
Yeah, I think it was the late 80s that they changed it, wasn't it, from GRID to HIV?
Yeah. GRID, of course, stood for gay-related immune deficiency. Mm. But when was the first time you heard about HIV then?
Oh, way
or
back.
Or GRID or AIDS.
Yeah, way back at the beginning when it was first mentioned in the press here in Australia, and I had been reading articles in magazines from overseas where they were mentioning it in the American magazines, that there was this plague that was hitting the people in New York. And I thought, oh, God, that's going to be pretty horrible. And then it came to Australia, of course, and then it was there. But I didn't get involved until quite, well, later in the program, because I was busy working two jobs at the time.
Hands full as it was.
Mm.
Now, can you tell us a little bit about what it was like in Melbourne when it first kind of reared its head here?
Well, as I say, I wasn't sort of that involved in the 80s.
Okay.
It wasn't until the early 90s that I became involved with the AIDS Council. And it was still pretty... wild, you know, there were people dying all over the place because it was the antiretrovirals had only just been introduced overseas, and I think the Australian government were very wary about giving them to the to Australia because they hadn't been tested by our people. I think, is that right?
The Therapeutic Goods Administration. Yeah,
I don't think that. But then they said, well, look, we're going to die anyhow. Why can't we have them?
Hmm.
And then the government said, yeah, righto. So they brought them in. People were still dying. But once the antiretrovirals came in, it started to make a hell of a difference. You sort of people living a lot longer, and some of them are still alive. I've still known them after 20 years. Mm.
And that's the incredible thing about it. So many people were told by their doctors, look, you've got 6 months, you've got 3 months, you've got 9 months, or, you know, you've got a definite period of time.
Mm-hmm.
Do what you want to do. You know, spend the money, do it. And, of course, so many people... fortunately, of course, didn't die straight away.
Yes.
And as you've said, are still with us.
Yep.
Quite often healthier.
Healthier, but because they were told to go off and you had this limited time, most of them went off and spent everything they had, thinking that they weren't going to have to worry about it. And then the antiretrovirals came in and they kept living. And now a lot of them are doing it tough because they don't have that money that they received when they were paid out and all this sort of thing, you know, which has made it a bit difficult. But there's always been the support for them, so that's the main thing.
Now, we're going to continue this conversation in just a little moment. This is Well, Well, Well on Joy 94.9. This is Well, Well, Well on Joy 94.9, and we are celebrating the 30th anniversary of the Victorian AIDS Council Gay Men's Health Centre by chatting all about the 90s. And we are chatting to Gordon Wilson, who's been a longtime volunteer of the Victorian AIDS Council Gay Men's Health Centre. Now, Gordon, when did you start becoming involved with the Victorian AIDS Council?
It was 1993. I remember I was at a party one time, and a friend of mine who was with the South Support Group, he was a retired teacher, and he said, listen, we need you to come and be a part of this organisation because we want volunteers and blah, 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 blah. And I said, oh, okay, Ron, what do I have to do? And he said, well, there's a bus leaving from a place in Hampton, which I knew, and I lived in Hampton. And he said, meet us around there on the thing, and we're going to the AIDS Memorial Quilt and the Candlelight Vigil and Quilt Display at the City Square. It was in those days. They met there. And that year they estimated there were 10,000 people walked up Swanston Street, turned right at Burke Street, straight up Burke Street, stopped the traffic, everything, and we got to, and then we walked around to the exhibition building where the quilts were laid out on display. And so I went to that, and then I said, okay, what do I have to do from now? So then I had to do the training, and that was very difficult in those days, a very hard training schedule, 2 full days full on, people crying, people collapsing in heaps because, you know, it was just very, very emotional.
Now, you mentioned the South support groups.
Yeah, well, there was Central, South, North, East, and West, I think. Did they have one in the West? They didn't have one in the West in those days, did they?
Probably not.
I don't think they had one in the West in those days, but those were the 4 groups. South support went from about Caulfield right the way down the Mornington Peninsula, right down to Portsea, and that's where we covered.
And just for the uninitiated who don't know, well, what was a support group there for? Who were they supporting?
All volunteers that were supporting people with HIV.
Ah, right.
And we had our meetings. Used to have a once a month meeting, and there were from those meetings they would get the support groups that would look after a client, mm-hmm. and would see them do everything that they could for them, and be with them when everything was happening. And there was you would have your client carers, you had your care team leader, your care team coordinator, and you went up the line into the different way it was worked. But it was great because everybody supported everybody, so that you were, if you had a problem, you could ring the team, I forget what they called, the group area group leader, and they could put you on the right track about what was going on. But it was very, very difficult because people would, you were sitting with people who were dying, and it was pretty rough.
And that kind of leads well to my next question, which is, you know, what did things look like back at that time in 1993 when you were starting getting involved?
Well, that's what it was. Yeah. You were going with looking after people. I had my first client as soon as I sort of signed on. They said, righto, we need you to look after this man. And I said, okay. So I looked after him for 5 years and sat with him when he died in the Alfred Hospital and had to go to his funeral and all the rest of it. Yeah, it was pretty sad, pretty sad.
Very sad times, but of course there were also good times.
Oh, there's lots of fun.
When people were, they were unwell, but you could, sort of like a social contact for people.
That's right, yeah. You would pick them up and take them out. I used to go to the movies with my client, mm-hmm. Do all this sort of thing, you know, but just to make him, he was quite well for a long, long time. He went down very quickly at the end, but... And that's what the groups did. There's usually 3 people in a care team with a care team leader, and then the care team coordinator would have, say, 3 or 4 care teams to look after, so that you had that pyramid effect. Mm-hmm. And you would go off and help them with their washing and their shopping and do all the bits and pieces that you could for them. Yeah, drive them to their medical appointments.
And a lot of this work was done with the Royal District Nursing Service.
The RDNS were there, yes.
As well.
Yeah,
yep.
Still see some of the old... Some of the women that I met when I first joined, yes, they're still with the RDNS. Yeah. Mm. And it's quite amazing, yeah.
Now, when you were involved with the organisation when you first began, did you immediately get slotted into this support program?
Basically.
Or did you do the orientation into the organisation that showed you the different various areas?
Yeah, we did the orientation, mm-hmm. and then you did the training. When you decided what you wanted to do, you went and did the training. And then once you'd done that, that was that full 2 days full on. You went, started at 9 in the morning, finished at 5 o'clock at night with a break for lunch. So it was pretty hectic. And we would, from then on, then they said, well, do you want to be on a care team or what did you want to do? So I said, yes, I'll be on a care team. And I also volunteered to be at the Positive Living Centre on the Tuesday night when they were having their, when they started to do the meals.
All right.
On the Tuesday night down there. So I used to work every Tuesday night at the Positive Living Centre as well.
So that was in addition to the work you were doing, supporting people, looking after people quite often in their own homes.
Yep.
Then you were also there on Tuesday nights. Mm, were you working as well?
Yes.
Wow.
Still working.
Right.
So that would have been quite a substantial amount of time.
Oh, yeah, There wasn't much time for sort of going out and enjoying yourself. Yeah. But I did enjoy myself because I've always been a people person. Mm-hmm. And so helping people was great, you know, and helping the people that had HIV and in the advanced stages of dementia and all this sort of thing. It was, yeah. It's I got more out of it than I ever gave.
And I think one of the important things too that people quite often say about volunteering, whether it's here at Joy or whether it's at the Victorian AIDS Council or in any organisation, when you volunteer, you meet other like-minded people, but you also meet people who are nothing like you except that you're doing the same thing together.
It's a common bond, yeah. Actually. Yeah. I made friends when I started there 20 years ago, and I still have them. Mm. You know, some of them.
And that's really powerful stuff.
Yes.
Great connections.
Friendships have endured.
Yeah.
Well, we've got to take a break for a little bit more music. This is, again, from the 90s, the Spice Girls, if you will.
Oh, well.
Yeah, with Wannabe. This is Well, Well, Well on Joy 94.9.
Yo!
This is Well, Well, Well on Joy 94.9, and that was Spice Girls with Wannabe. If you've just joined us, we are celebrating the 30th anniversary of the Victorian AIDS Council Gay Men's Health Centre. And in doing so, we are going back to the 90s and talking to longtime volunteer Gordon Wilson and Joy presenter as well, all about what the Victorian AIDS Council Gay Men's Health Centre was like at that time.
Hmm.
Now, before the break, we were talking about, you know, what it was like and what the prognosis was like for many people diagnosed at the time. I'd imagine it would have been, it would be a very difficult role for a volunteer to manage. What was there much support that was in place to help you manage through that process?
Oh yeah, yeah. There was great support really because of the support program they had set up with the groups. If you were on a care team, you could go to the care team leader, and if he needed to know something, he'd go to the care team coordinator. If he couldn't help, he went further up the thing to the area coordinator, and if he couldn't help, you got onto the headquarters at the VAC. You always had that support to know what you had to do.
Yeah.
And a lot of people found it very difficult, but they had counsellors for the support people as well, so that if people were falling apart because of all the tragedy that they were seeing, they could go and see the counsellor.
And Gordon, was it all men helping men, or were there women involved? Were there women as clients, like women who were living with HIV, or was it all men living with HIV? Were they all gay? Were they all injecting drug users? You know, the normal stereotypes that we have trotted out all the time.
Well, of course, you don't know whether they were all gay or whether they were drug users or what. Mm-hmm. But there were always women. The women were basically the backbone of it.
Mm-hmm.
Because the women had the time. Mm-hmm. A lot of them were housewives sort of thing, and they had the time. They weren't professional women. Some of them were, of course, but you had teachers, and they had all these people that had skills, different skills to bring to the whole thing, so that you could go to almost anybody and ask a question and you'd get an answer somewhere. But the women were really the backstay of the whole thing. And of course, you didn't know how people became infected. We never asked. You never asked. They had HIV, so mm-hmm. you just went in and looked after them, and that was it. You'd never ask questions. If they wanted to tell you, they'd tell you, but you never repeated it. It's all confidential, so you just never repeated it. And it's one of those things that you learn. But no, it was a very mixed group. There were gay men. There were some gay women.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of married women. A few straight men mm-hmm. were helped as well. But it was like people that had respect and wanted to help people that were going through this dreadful crisis in their lives.
Now, you know, if you were to step out of your life as a volunteer with VAC and look at, you know, your social group and as an individual through that time as a gay man, What was that like? And, you know, how did you cope with being a gay man in Melbourne when the HIV epidemic was still kind of at its height?
Well, you were busy yourself. Like, as I say, I was working. I didn't retire until after 2001 or 2002. And so I was still working all the way through the 90s. And you had time off, of course. You had your own friends away from the whole scene.
Yeah.
And you had your own groups, and you had your friends, your close friends that you could still call on, you know, for social contact and all the rest of it. So you did the thing. But a lot of the times you socialise with the people, the other carers. You did. It was one of those things, because you had a common bond. That common bond was there that you could go along and you could sort of say, how you going? Oh, I had a terrible time, you know, shocking.
It was a shared understanding of what was going on.
That's right, yeah, yeah. So that was the way it went. But I don't think I ever missed out on much.
Yeah. How big were these care teams?
Well, the South Support Group at one stage, I think, had 60 members.
Wow.
Because we covered a big area. We had covered a huge area. We had the biggest area of the whole of the Victoria, actually, from, as I say, from Caulfield right down out to Gippsland, down into thing. If anybody was down there, somebody would have to sort of do something about it. And the central was around Port Melbourne, around that area. Paran was central, and then north was out through the past the Laird, wasn't it? Was
that's right, on the correct side of town.
On that side, yes, yep. Yes, on the correct side of town, right.
Indeed.
Yes.
And Tex will never let you forget.
No.
No, but Gordon, you were talking about, we've talked about these care teams of people who were looking after people who some were okay and relatively okay health-wise, and others were quite sick and others were dying. How many people were involved in a care team? Are we talking like a couple of people if someone was well, but then a team of 10 if someone was sick?
If somebody got very sick, you would have people come in. There would be they'd call out for volunteers to go in to sit with the person, so that you would have teams of people. She could be there overnight, even.
Oh, so you're talking about people there like around the clock care.
Is around the clock care sometimes, yeah. Oh, yeah, that happened a few times. I never got involved with that side of it, but there were a couple of clients that I knew that had to have around the clock care, and the people just gave up their time and they went and did it.
So, and was Fairfield Hospital still open at the time?
Fairfield was still open at the time, yeah. Yeah. It was 1997, I think, when when it closed, wasn't it, when they went to the Alfred? Was it 97?
It was late 90s, yes.
Yeah, yep. I think it was around about 97 when that happened. We were there at the opening of that, of course. And it was quite interesting.
We might talk a little bit more about Fairfield after the break, but this is Well on Joy 94.9. This is Well on Joy 94.9, and we are celebrating the 30th anniversary of the Victorian AIDS Council. Now, before the break, we got into a bit about Fairfield House.
Fairfield Hospital.
Hospital, sorry.
Yep.
Which closed in 1997.
Or thereabouts.
Oh, yeah. Yep. Thereabouts.
Ish.
Ish.
What was Fairfield Hospital?
Well, Gordon, what was Fairfield Hospital?
Well, it was originally the Infectious Diseases Hospital. And if you had one of the raging infectious diseases like polio or something or other in the early days, that's where you went. You were out at Fairfield House. And then when the AIDS epidemic hit, they made that into the place where they would take they took the people with AIDS. And they were the people that were in the early stages of in the early years, the early 80s, when there was no cure, there was no nothing, and they just went out there basically to die. And it was a funny old place. It was very decrepit and very whatever. It had been there for centuries, I think. I don't know how long it had been there, but it had been there for a long, long time.
It had been there a long time, and it was notable by having peacocks, which roamed the grounds.
Yeah.
But most of the patients in the hospital, most of the rooms had balcony doors, so the doors could be open and fresh air could come in.
That's right.
And people who smoked could go and sit outside and smoke and sit with their friends.
Yeah. It was a very community type place, really, because you could go in there at almost any time and be see who you wanted to see or meet up with somebody there. And the nursing staff out there were absolutely stunning. They were so good. It was just unbelievable. And it was just it was a great place to be. And then, of course, they decided they were going to close it.
But before that, and it's just an interesting aside here, the executive director of the Victorian AIDS Council Gay Men's Health Centre, Matt Dixon, started out as a nurse at Fairfield Hospital.
Did he?
So, So it goes a big circle.
What goes around comes around, of course. And, of course, they built, they had a memorial garden at Fairfield House as well, where people could be cremated and have their ashes placed there.
And whilst that fell into disrepair, it has recently been reinvigorated by the Northern Metropolitan Institute of TAFE, who now have their campus, one of their campuses there.
And they use their gardening department to look after it, which is rather nice.
Mm.
Yeah, which is great, really, because it deserves to be preserved, you know, because there are, it's where people are resting.
Yeah.
Indeed, yeah.
Now, in the 90s as well was when, you know, we had some great advances with regards to combination therapy. What was it like at that time when those kind of findings came through?
Well, it gave a lot of hope to a lot of people. You know, you thought, oh, good, there's something that can help, you know.
Yeah.
They were not promising a cure. It was just something that would stop the advance of the disease, you know. And, of course, everybody was very happy that it was coming in. But it took a while before it sort of, once they started to take the drugs, it took a while for it to sort of start taking effect. And people were still dying in between the time when it really did start to take effect, you know, when they'd been on. And everything changed after that. It was quite amazing, the change. There was hope. Everybody had the hope that eventually they would find a cure. Of course, we're still hoping that they will find a cure. It's still been one of those things, and it, every year you get to, somebody comes up, they think they've got to found a cure or something or other, but it doesn't work. But it's still with the drugs that they've got now. Once upon a time, I saw a list of one of the clients' lists of drugs, and it was on an A4 sheet of paper, and it filled the whole A4 sheet of paper. That was the drugs he had to take every day before the other ones came in.
Yeah.
And you look at the combinations that are available now.
They take one tablet a day,
yeah,
which is so good, and which means that their whole lives have changed. A lot of people can go back to work even, you know, because they don't have to worry about, I've got to go out and take a couple of handfuls of tablets or something. Rather, they just have one tablet in the morning or the evening or whatever it is, and that's it. Mm. So they have a greater freedom for themselves as well.
What was the, Gordon, what was the feeling of stigma or discrimination like back in those days for people living with HIV?
It was pretty huge.
Yeah.
It was quite huge, you know. It was just one of those things that I never had the stigma myself, but it didn't matter. But you knew how to look after the people so that they didn't get stigmatised by other people. You know, you never mentioned that, although you could see that they were quite sick. Some people were quite sick. But it was, the stigma was from the people that didn't understand what was happening. Mm-hmm. The homophobes. They were the main instigators of the stigma, of course, because they didn't like gay people to start with, and it was in parenthesis, gay disease. But there were women with HIV, because I had a client who it was a great woman, and she had HIV. She's still going. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, but the stigma was always there, and they had to be very careful who they spoke to as well, in case they were stigmatised. Yeah.
Now, we asked this question yesterday, you silly quaint text. It was actually last week on the show, when we had Ian in talking about the 80s. Mm-hmm. We asked him, what would you say, and we'll make this of the 90s, what would you say were the worst and the brightest aspects, perhaps, of the HIV epidemic for you, for the work you were doing, and perhaps the reflections of what you saw going around you back in the 90s?
Well, it was... early 90s was very, very hard, as I said, because you had so many people dying. But it was the big thing I got out of it was the friendships and the knowing that I'd helped somebody as much as I could, and when the drugs came in and everybody was starting to get better and you could see them, and it was so much. That was a great way. That was another great part of the 90s when that actually came in.
Mm-hmm.
What else could you say? I lost quite a few good friends, and I upset me. It really did upset me. But the support was so good that I went to see a counsellor, and I saw a counsellor for 12 months, I suppose, every once a month. Mm-hmm. And it was great. Yeah. It was great service, really. Mm-hmm. Was. And but it was the beginning was a tough time, but then gradually it got easier and easier. But we still have a lot of people with HIV, and there's a lot of new infections coming on. But they've got a better chance at a better life now, of course.
Now, having talked so much about the 90s, where do you see the organisation kind of going in, a decade from now?
Well, I think it'll probably have to change. It'll have to change quite a bit, actually, because you won't have all the people that are going to be relying on all the services all the time. Because with the drugs and everything, they can go back to work. They don't have to worry about the support that they are going to be, that the people that have lived through it have had. People coming along will be, working, leading ordinary lives, but just be HIV positive. So that I'm quite sure that the VAC will be changing with it, because everything changes over time. You know, nothing stays the same, and I don't think that the VAC won't stay the same either, because they'll be changing to make things better for those that need it, and to help those that don't need it as well if they need it. You know, but it's they will have to change, because the whole disease is changing so much.
Well, I mean, even just looking at how things have changed since the 90s, where the services, by the sounds of it, were so focused on supporting those who had really high high needs.
That's right. There's not the people with high needs these days, you know. There are still people that do need them, because they're survivors from the long time ago. But the modern people, the people that are getting infected now, they are not going they're not going to be living the lifestyle that the people in the 90s lived.
No, their experience of HIV wouldn't be entirely different.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. And a lot of people don't realise what HIV does, because they've never seen what happened.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the problem.
Yeah. Now, Gordon, if you could point to the biggest change that you've seen since starting with the organisation, what would you say it is? Is it the fact that treatments have come along and they now work?
Well, that's one of the biggest changes, yeah. And because everybody can start feeling like you've always still got it. I gather if you've got HIV, you're always going to have it. So it just depends in your own personality whether you're going to get over it or not, with the help of the drugs that are now available.
Sure.
But I could, yeah, it's... difficult to say, actually, Tex, I beg your pardon. But, yeah.
And I do have one last question for you. What would you say has been your highest achievement?
My highest achievement?
Since you've been involved in working in the sector of HIV.
Oh, I've never looked for high achievements. I've just sort of gone along and done what I wanted to do, what they've asked me to do. I just go along there and they say, can you do this? Yes, I can do that. That's fine. I don't mind. Yeah. I suppose one of the highest achievements was they made me a life member.
Oh.
That's about it, I think. Yeah.
Well done. Yeah. Well done.
Well, Gordon, thank you very much for coming on air with us this evening. As I said before, you know, as someone who hasn't been in Melbourne for a very long time, I'm really, really enjoying hearing all of the stories from the past of the organisation. So.
It was a hard time to live through for a lot of people, but it's getting better. It's got a hell of a lot better since.
But one really important thing is that it's living history.
It's living history, yeah, that's true, yeah.
Well, this is Well, Well, Well on Joy 94.9, and this is the 30th anniversary edition of Well, Well, Well. This is Well, Well, Well on Joy 94.9, and we've been talking all about the 90s this week, as we cover the four decades of the Victorian AIDS Council.
Indeed, Jason. And I know we're going to talk about some of the anniversary events coming up during the rest of this month. But I thought I might just make the note right now that tomorrow, the 12th of July, is the actual 30th anniversary of the Victorian AIDS Council Gay Men's Health Centre. Of course, when the organisation was first formed, it was at the Laird Hotel. There had been a number of meetings at various places, including the Royal Dental Hospital before that. But at the Laird Hotel, a group of people met and talked and argued and discussed and got heated and calmed down. And finally, a woman stood up, Alison Thorne, I believe it was, and said, "Right, you queens, we've had enough chat. Let's actually vote on something." And that's when the vote was made to form the Victorian AIDS Action Committee, which later became the Victorian AIDS Council. So tomorrow is the actual 30th anniversary or the 30th birthday of the organisation. Really important stuff.
It is. It's, you know, it's an important part of our community's history.
But of course, the Laird Hotel has always been great for supporting of the AIDS mm-hmm. Council, hasn't it, from mm-hmm. the very beginning? Well, like you say, the whole thing started there, and the customers at the Laird from the very beginning have always been very generous in their donations and everything towards the support groups and all the rest of it.
It's funny, Gordon, when we were off the air, you were saying that the North Support Group, which the Laird falls into the catchment area of the North Support Group, was always the richest of the support groups.
Because we always had to raise our own funds. We had to raise our own funds to keep going. Mm-hmm. We used to have, what do they call them, trivia nights and everything where we'd have prizes and everything and mm-hmm. raise money that way. We didn't have anything over there apart from a couple of saunas, which we used to
get. Oh, on your side?
On the south side. The south side. We'll just say the south and the north side. But in the north side, they had the Laird was such a popular place and is still a popular place. Mm-hmm. And they had the tins on the...
Oh, the donation tins.
The donation tins on the counter, and they'd be filled overnight. Just about every night they'd be filled.
Well, it's rather fitting that we're talking about the Laird because there's something happening this Saturday
at
the Laird
indeed.
Hotel. There will be from this Saturday from 12:30 to 3:30.
From 12:30 till 6 o'clock.
Oh, thank you.
I know they originally on the website it said from 12:30 to 3:30, but it is actually until 6 o'clock at night. There's something. At 2 o'clock, they're going to do the unveiling of what you're about to talk about. But the excitement and the reminiscing and all the chatting is encouraged to continue from 12:30 until 6 at night.
And it's one of those extra special events at the Laird where it's open to everyone, including women. And it, as you said, 30 years ago, that the Laird Hotel is the site where the vote was made to... Mm-hmm. To establish the Victorian AIDS Action Committee, and there will be a plaque unveiled at 2 p.m. To commemorate that.
And Jamie Gardner, who was at that initial meeting, who's been very vocal in human rights, especially gay and lesbian rights over the years, is the person who's going to be unveiling the plaque, which later will go on, be permanently affixed to the wall inside the Laird Hotel so that it will always be there as a reminder for people. Mm-hmm. And it's been called VAC to the Future, which, so we're going back to where it all began for an afternoon of 80s fun. So there'll be 80s music, a barbecue supplied by the Laird Hotel, and it starts at 12:30 and the Laird, of course, is 149 Gipp Street in Abbotsford.
Now, quickly, because we are slowly running out of time, Tech. There is a series of lectures that are happening.
Of course,
the first of which is tomorrow evening, and Adam Carr will be presenting The Courage of Our Convictions, Lessons from the AIDS Panic of the 1980s. The lecture commences at 6:30 p.m. and will be followed by a guided tour of the 30 Years of Passion exhibition. And there'll be light refreshments, and it is all happening at the Public Record Office, which is in North Melbourne.
It's actually 99 Sheil Street, S-H-I-E-L Street.
But if you want more information on this or the other events that are occurring for the 30th anniversary of the Victorian AIDS Council, you can go to vicaids.asn.au.
Or just go to your favourite search engine, perhaps the one starting with G, type in Victorian AIDS Council, or go to our Facebook page, facebook.com/wellwellwelljoy, and spread across all of Facebook. I think there are reminders about this, but certainly in the Well 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 Joy Facebook page, we have been regularly posting the link to our website.
Now, next week, Adam and I will be chatting to our past executive director, Mike Kennedy, all about the 2000s or the noughties, and covering some music from that decade as well.
And coming up next, of course, is Hide and Seek, and I think it's Dean and Avi tonight. And I had a little sneak peek of one of the guests and a very large presence in our community, and you will enjoy hearing him. We need to say thank you to our guest tonight.
Indeed we do.
It's been a great pleasure.
It's been great to have you.
And a big hello to everyone listening out there, especially to Deb, to Warren and to Wayne, who are regular listeners. And we look forward. Yes, you'll be back next week.
Be back next week.
Adam and Mike.
Yep.
So, cheers, everyone. Have a great night. Bye-bye.
Bye for now.
Bye.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.